Evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Thursday, April 17th, 2014. This is Sally Baptist speaking, and thank you for tuning in tonight to our weekly edition of Smart Talk, Election 2014, Know the Candidates. We're doing the format a little bit differently tonight, and just so you kind of know what's going on here, Well, first off, before I go there, the call-in number is 347-857-4364. The call-in number is 347-857-4364. And make sure you press 1 to be placed in the host queue. If you don't press 1, then I let you continue to listen and I don't interrupt you. But if you want to join the discussion, make sure you press 1. That lets me know you have something to say on the air. And as I was saying, tonight we're doing a little bit different format. Sherry Smart and Neil Rice will be joining me at about 8 o'clock. And we've got a couple of guests on later. So we have a candidate and also an expert on Second Amendment. So we'll get into that discussion later, but for right now, we're going to discuss some of the other events that are going on, and you are welcome to join the discussion, and also you can go out to the chat room and place your comments and questions out there as well. They've been having some problems with the chat room, and I'm trying to get it going. I'm hoping it's going to work tonight, but okay, there we go. It's out there, so you're more than welcome to join the chat room as well. And this first hour, I'm going to talk about a few things, rant about a few things, and you're more than welcome to join one way or the other. If you have any information, any topics you specifically want to address on the air, you can send me an email at americanstatesman@1791.com. That's americanstatesman@1791.com. And then we'll try to get it in there on the show, bring it as one of the topics. And also just up on Monday's show, or the upcoming show on Monday, we're going to try to use Monday as a point to give an update on the Operation American Spring, which starts on May 16th. As we get information, we'll try to use Monday because May 16th isn't very long away. I think we're about a month out right from now. So I'm going to do my best to participate in that. I may not be there on the 16th, but I may be there as part of the follow-up. And for those who are not familiar with Operation American Spring, we've had a couple of shows. We've had Colonel Harry Riley on talking about it. He may be on Monday. I'm not sure yet. But we're going to be having updates. He's been on a couple of times. We've had Chris Blystone from the Operation American Spring group as well, communication. And with everything we've just seen happen in Nevada, I think Operation American Spring is more needed than ever. I think that only proves the problem, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But May 16th, it's extremely important. Start calling every congressional representative up there. Well, you might want to call the Supreme Court justices, too, just for the fun of it if you want to. I don't know. Call the president if you want to. Call all of them. But the main thing is I want to know, are these congressional representatives with us or against us? Do they truly believe in the Constitution that they refuse to follow? Tell me why they should keep their job, which is all to do with what Operation Spring is. Operation American Spring, keep saying that wrong, OAS, is all about. And the whole, and maybe if we have time today before we get to the second half, I'll go over some of the declaration, what's actually the legal document that's being presented to our useless leaders. Should we call them useless or destructive, treasonous, anti-American, unconstitutional? We have the Declaration of Administrative Revisions. So if we have time tonight, we'll talk about that some, or plan on talking about that on Monday. You have to understand that we are putting them on notice. And this is, I'm not the one coordinating this, but it's we the people. We have to have the masses. We saw what happened in Nevada when the masses, when we the people unite against a tyrannical, out-of-control federal government. We do have strength in numbers. We have to show them we're tired of what's going on. And some of the things I'm going to talk about tonight, proof of this out-of-control government, the federal government's out of control, but state governments are out of control, too. Between them surrendering our rights over to the United Nations and to the federal government, they are also out of control, and they have to be stopped. And on that note, I do not have the number of the Senate bill, but House bill, Senate bill, but there is a bill in Washington, D.C., as we speak, and I'm going to try and pull it up here, that is literally wanting to give every drop of water on U.S. soil to the EPA. They want the EPA to have full control over every drop of water on this land. So if you happen to own a ranch that has a pond on it, EPA owns it. You have no rights. And this ties into what we just saw happen in Nevada. This massive, massive, out-of-control government taking over everything. It's so despicable. It is so anti-American. It's just, it's disgusting in every way. And May 16th, as I talk about these things, I'm just going to say May 16th, D.C., May 16th, OAS, May 16th, we have got to send such a loud message to these corrupt, anti-American, treasonous, traitorous, unconstitutional whatevers, commies, because I do believe what they're doing is borderline of communism. And we know we have communists in office today, and we know Common Core is communism. And all these things, this communist takeover of this country is going to happen if we the people don't stand together. And this EPA, just imagine the EPA controlling the water. Think about what that truly means. They've already destroyed so many farmers. They've destroyed many of them here in Florida. They've destroyed them out west. Look what they did to California in reference to the stream with the fish in it, routine, whatever that small fish is that they were trying to save. They were going to starve the people to save the fish, when in fact the fish wasn't really in danger. As they say all these things as their excuse to do stuff. Just like they said the tortoise, they had to save the tortoise, and that's why they had to destroy all the ranches in Nevada. The government is totally out of control. And the only way it's going to change is with Americans. And I stress that word, Americans. Because if you're not American, then don't be here and get the heck out of Dodge. These people who keep wanting to divide us up into every type of faction that they can dream up, which is what Washington warned us about. President George Washington warned us very well, political parties and associations and factions, anything to divide the people. Divide and conquer is what they're doing. So for anybody out there, I don't care what the faction is, because there's different ones. Women, are you women or are you Americans? I mean, when you go into the voting booth, you say, I'm going to go vote like a woman or am I going to vote like an American? Stop allowing them to play all these games to divide us as a people. And you know what, homosexuals? When you go to vote, are you voting as a homosexual or are you voting as an American? You know, you need to vote as an American. Women, you need to vote as Americans. And then, of course, we have the Muslim population, the Islamists out there. They keep trying to give all the rights to the illegals, too, but for the sake of the Muslims who don't believe in anything that's American, there's no way you're going to ever vote as an American. You may be a legal American in the sense of some status, but you'll never vote as an American because you don't believe in America. The Muslim, sad to say, some people get mad at me for saying it, but if you're true to the Quran and the doctrine of the Muslim faith, Islam, you're never going to be an American because you don't believe anything like us. You believe it's okay to chop off people's heads. Most Americans don't believe that. There's some people I'd like to see where their heads chopped off personally, but I wouldn't do it because it's not the right thing to do, and we're taught not to, we have a strong belief of not killing, not to murder, the Ten Commandments. But that doesn't have anything to do with Islam and the Muslim faith, the Muslim Brotherhood that's coming in here to destroy this country. So you'll never vote as an American. You can't be both. I've said it plenty of times on the show. I truly believe it. Who knows, I may end up being dead one day for having said it. Who knows, I may be the one who gets my head lopped off. I don't know. But they're, just think about what it truly means. And all this garbage with the car care, however they say it, C-A-I-R, the Islamic relations group, whatever it is, they're out there all over the place. I mean, they're playing similar games of what La Raza plays. La Raza's playing it that they deserve, the Southwest belongs to Mexico, it doesn't belong to America, and all the other nonsense they say out there. And they hate the Alamo, you know, La Raza hates America. These people will never be Americans. I don't care, call them Hispanics, Latinos, whatever. If you're so inclined that you hate America, you're not, you'll never be an American. You might be some legal definition of one, for those of you who actually came in the legal way. But if you truly believe that way, if you think La Raza is the solution, and if you believe you have to have a separate faction for you, for the Latinos, not the Americans, but the Latinos, and I'm so sick of hearing Latinos or Hispanics, be Americans. If you don't want to be an American, leave America. Why are you here trying to destroy America? And why are Americans allowing you to destroy America? Be an American or get the heck out. If you're a Latino, go back to South America. Go to Latin America. If you're a Cuban, go to Cuba. If you're a Mexican, go to Mexico. Whatever. If you don't want to be an American, don't. We will let you go. I would love, I mean, if time was on my hands, if I had all the time in the world routine, I would start a fund to say for every Hispanic Latino who hates being an American, who is so much against America, let's start a fund to give them a one-way ticket to wherever it is they want to go, because you don't want to be an American. And you have a bunch of idiots in the two political parties especially, but you have idiots in public offices saying, well, we have to reach out to Latinos. We don't care about Americans. Americans don't really count. We have to go to the illegals and the Latinos, and frequently a lot of illegals are Latinos or Mexicans or Cubans. Latino being somewhat of a generic term of saying South America. But the whole point is, if we're not Americans, we're not going to save this country. And the Latinos, I don't think, want to save the country. The Muslims don't want to save this country. These types of people don't believe in America. They're never going to save America. They don't believe in it. So why do the idiots in public office, and of course we all sort of know the answer, but we got to get the vote. We got to keep our jobs. We're going to do something to stay here. The fact that we violate the Constitution every day is really not a problem. The fact that we work for all the special interests and we screw over the Americans every day, that's not a problem. Just keep doing it. That's what it's all about. How many ways can we destroy America? How many ways can we destroy America? And I'll tell you, there's definitely those who are coming up with it. And, you know, any candidate that I hear say, well, we have to reach out to the Latinos. Well, okay, you have to reach out to the Muslims, too. You have to reach out to the women. You have to reach out to the Russians. Would you get back on what we're about, being Americans? When you walk into the voting booth, you're supposed to be an American. If you're not an American, you don't belong in that voting booth. And this includes the Asians, whether it be Korean, Chinese, Vietnamese, whatever. If you're an American, be an American. If not, go someplace else. If you can't get there, if you are a Korean who's here against your will and doesn't believe in America and you want a ticket, we'll figure some way to raise money for you to get a ticket to go home. Go back to wherever it is you want to be if you don't want to be here. So, united, we will stand on May 16th. Divided, we do not stand a chance, and the country is falling. And May 16th, I think, is a very critical event to say what we are as a people. Are we Americans, or are we something else? Because all this divisiveness, the way they have divided us up, with all these factions coming up with every kind of different way to manipulate the vote and control people is all anti-American. Be an American and nothing but an American, or leave. It's time to get past all this dual nationality crapola. Be an American or leave. On that note, getting back to all the different things, May 16th, what we saw happen in Nevada last week is so telling of what's wrong with our country today. And it's also telling of what's right, that people did come together. Now, I don't quite understand this. I'm going to write something up on it within the next day or two here, but I got to respond to Glenn Beck and his information out there where he somehow, I don't know what he was thinking when he talks about Nevada. He's missing some of the most key points. He, you know, and we know no matter what you do with any kind of group, this was even true when we were protesting on the Hill against Obamacare, there's going to be those who are going to come in, not because they agree with you, but because they don't agree. Your opposition is going to come in and try to cause trouble. And that happens. The issue, when they talked about the guns, how many guns were there, the whole thing is so strange and nutsy. The Bundy, Clive and Bundy, their family never once said, come on, bring all the guns and let's have a war, or have, you know, that isn't what they said. However, the people saw the United States taking arms up against its own people. The United States government was ready to kill Americans, was ready to kill the cows and the Americans. They were tasering the Americans. They had the dogs out to try to harm the Americans. They were threatening the Americans. Of course, they'll never do that on the southern border. We'll never secure our homeland against the illegal invaders who are trying to destroy us, but they will go after Clive and Bundy and the ranchers and the American people. And if it had not been for the massive turnout, all the people there, it would not have, the results, I think, would be quite different. Of course, we all know the Bureau of Land Management, which by itself is not our government. These agencies are not people we elected to do anything. And they are given so much enormous power when they were never elected. And, you know, the rumors that they're staying at some hotel, a couple of hotels, sitting and waiting for things to calm down when they can come in and take over. But see, that's how sick this government has gotten. This is why we know America's falling. This is why May 16th is so important. What happened in Nevada should be the primer for what needs to happen in D.C. on May 16th. And May 16th isn't going to be a one-day event. It's going to start on May 16th, but it's not going to end on May 16th. It may take 2 weeks, could take a month, who knows? But we're going to let these people know they've been fired because they have violated their oath of office. We, the people, are the government, not them. They have totally lost track of this. And we better do something now because they're out there doing their best to take the guns away from the people is really getting in their way. And while, you know, Glenn Beck didn't want to have a war out there, who wanted to have a war? At the same time, when you see the American government, the federal government, building an army against you on your own land, on the homeland here, where the American government is going after the American people, what are the Americans supposed to do? Just sit there and say, well, go ahead and blow my head off. It's okay. Or do you defend yourself? Isn't that what the Second Amendment was all about? This is the part that I don't quite get with Glenn Beck. I mean, it's fine to not incite the violence. Let's do things in the most peaceful way possible. Let's give peace a chance. Let's try to resolve these things. But the fact it was the Army, it was the federal, and I should say not the military army, the Bureau of Land Management coming in as a police, army, whatever you want to call it, to come in and take over the American people. In this case, it was the Bundys and their cattle. And Glenn Beck, I mean, he touches on the fact that the federal government owns too much land, but he doesn't talk about how that plays into everything else. And I'm going to go back to this email that I was sent and the different things, and part of what Cliven Bundy was saying, the case he was making, was that the Constitution doesn't allow the federal government to own all this land. When the federal government owns all the land, you have communism. When you have no rights to own private property, when the American people have no rights to own private property, everything is owned in common. It's called communism. And Glenn Beck doesn't talk much about that part of it. And, I mean, I've been following Glenn Beck for a long time. I was watching him when he was on CNN way back when. So I have seen a lot of changes in Glenn Beck over the years. But there's times when he goes, you know, I can see if he doesn't want to in any way promote or incite the violence and the guns and whatever else he does. He's not going to go out there and say, yeah, let's have a war. But to go out there and act like it was crazy to arm yourself against these people who were there armed and dangerous. If you weren't armed, they probably would have killed them. If there had been nobody else there with any kind of arms, they probably would not have thought twice about killing all these Americans. I mean, there's just something, Glenn Beck, you got something mixed up here. There's something just not quite right with your thinking on this process. Let's see if I can find this one article in reference to, okay, here we go. Let's see here. And this is going to be part of something I send to Mr. Beck. It's the Bundy Ranch Crisis, Who Owns America? And it goes through and it talks, this is pretty simple, but let's go ahead and mention it. Turtles and cows have absolutely no relevance in the situation in Nevada. Does the Constitution, and it goes into say, answer the question. Okay, so we're going to say what the, hold on here. I probably should have printed this up instead of looking at it online here. Does the Constitution make provisions for the federal government to own and control public lands? This is the only question we need to consider. Currently, the federal government owns approximately 30% of the United States territory. The majority of this federally owned land is in the West. For example, the feds own more than 80% of Nevada and more than 55% of Utah. There's something seriously wrong there. There is absolutely no reason the federal government would own all this land. They shouldn't be allowed to own all this land. Okay, the question has been long debated. You know, someplace in there, I'll give you where this actually came from. This was an email sent to me. Okay, the question has been long debated, Clause 2 of the Constitution, which is known as the Property Clause. Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 of the Constitution, which is known as the Property Clause. Proponents of federal expansion on both sides of the political aisle argue that this clause provides warrant for the federal government to control land throughout the United States. Is that really what the founding fathers were thinking? Yes, let's give all control to the federal government? That's totally opposite of what the Constitution was about. The Constitution was to prevent an out-of-control excessive, tyrannical government taking ownership of everything. It was totally the opposite of that. And I don't hear Glenn talking much about that part of it, even though Cliven Bundy was telling him that very same thing when he was a guest on the show. He was talking about the federal government does not have the right to own the state of Nevada. So that's why he refused to recognize. It wasn't that he wasn't recognizing a federal government. He wasn't recognizing the federal government to own the state of Nevada. Because you have no state sovereignty if the feds own the states. Let's just think about it. It's only common sense. Okay, the federal government owns the state. So what kind of state sovereignty do you have? What is state sovereignty? Okay, and then who owns the West? And then it goes and it's showing, there's a little map in here, of what percentage of the various states in the West are owned by the feds. And it's really quite interesting. And it truly is the West. I mean, you start very little in Texas. When you get down through that, the central part of the country there, and then you go west, starting from Washington State all the way down to New Mexico. I mean, They own almost all of Nevada. It's just they're sick, and it owns such a major portion of California. It owns, it looks like, most of Oregon and Utah. I mean, it's just, it's massive how much they own in these states. There is no state sovereignty when the federal government owns all this land. And the federal government shouldn't own any of it. It should not own any of it. It should be federal, by state control. But, and then we go into, the Congress shall have powers to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. Those who say this clause delegates the Fed's control over whatever land they arbitrarily decide to lay claim to are grossly misinterpreting even the most basic structure of the Constitution. It is said the Constitution is written in plain English. This is true. However, plain English does not allow one to remove context. Article 4 does not grant Congress the power to exercise sovereignty over land. And that only, again, when you think about the founders and what they were doing, that wasn't the point. It was the opposite. Less control by the federal government. Okay, and then Article 4 deals exclusively with state-to-state relations, such as protection from invasion, slavery, full faith and credit, creation of new states, and so on. It has nothing to do with ranches and cattle. Historically, the property clause delegated federal control over territorial lands up until the point when that land would be formed as a state. This was necessary during the time of the ratification of the Constitution due to the lack of westward development. And you can make a case for that. You can say right now it's not owned by any state. It's not a territory of a state. It's not created as a state. So, okay, you can understand that. But once it becomes a state, which is what Clive and Bundy was talking about, once it becomes a state, all the other rules are different. And there's something seriously wrong with a state constitution saying, well, we're a state, however, we're owned by the federal government. No, you're not a state if the federal government owns you. Okay, let's see here. The clause was drafted... The clause was drafted to constitutionalize the Northwest Ordinance, which the Articles of Confederation did not have the power to support. This ordinance gave the newly formed Congress the power to create new states instead of allowing the states themselves to expand their own land claims. So you can kind of understand why they, the wording. This is what it is. The property clause and Northwest Ordinance are both limited in power and scope. Once a state is formed and accepted in the Union, the federal government no longer has control over the land within the state's borders. From this moment, such land is considered property of the sovereign state. This is what Clive and Bundy was talking about. Yes, it was land of the federal government until it became a state. The federal government cannot own the state. It's totally contradictory to everything that the state is. Why have states if they're all going to be owned by the federal government? And that's really what we're seeing happen today with the Agenda 21, the regionalism, all this kind of stuff. This is all to go and say, you're not going to be a state, you're going to be part of the federal government. You're not going to have a county, you're going to be part of the state. Then the state's going to be the federal government, all to go out there and convert us from a free society, from a republic, to a communist society. This is what is happening. And people get upset and they say, oh, this is America. That can't happen here. Yes, it can. All you got to do is look and see what's going over in the Ukraine to have a clue. You really think there's not Hitler Juniors all over the place? You truly think we somehow exterminated the mentality of communism across the land? Not to mention people who are just greedy and will sacrifice the American people and America for their own personal gain. Most of the people in Congress don't care about this country. Most of the people in your state legislatures do not care about their state or the country. Florida is one of the most, and maybe the other states are just as bad, and I just haven't seen them up close because obviously I live in Florida, so I watch what they're doing. They are doing everything they can to destroy Florida as a state. They give everything to everybody else. I find it so interesting that illegals have more power and control and rights than any American. There's something sick here. This is why we're falling. And this is why May 16th is so important. This is why what happened in Nevada is so important. United we will stand. United we will save the future of this country. If we are divided, like they're trying to do, we won't survive. The United States won't last much longer. And I think what happened in Nevada was to say, yes, Americans are still united as a people. And notice how I said that, Americans. The American people. Not all this crap with the factions out there and every other kind of whatever. The Americans. Do we have enough Americans to fight off all the factions who keep trying to destroy us, including those in Congress? And you think about it, because we have Muslims in Congress today and in public office today who don't believe anything like the United States. How can they possibly take a sworn oath to uphold the Constitution? Of course, we have those who pretend to be Christians. Like, I mean, the Harry Reid, do you think he believes in the Constitution? What about Bonehead Boehner? Does he believe in the Constitution? Paul Ryan, what Constitution are you looking at? It's just so disgusting. Let's see here. Let me continue on. Excuse me, and I will give you the information as to, again, this was sent to me in an email, but I think there's a link there to where they got this. The continental United States is now formed into 50 independent sovereign states. No unclaimed lands are technically in existence. Therefore, the property clause no longer applies within the realm of federal control over these states. I want to read that again. The continental United States is now formed of 50 independent sovereign states. No unclaimed lands are technically in existence. Therefore, the property clause no longer applies within the realm of federal control over these states. This is what Clive and Bundy was saying. The federal government does not own the land anymore. It doesn't matter what Nevada's state constitution says. The federal government does not have the right to own a state. How can it be a sovereign state if the federal government owns it? It doesn't take much to figure this out. It's not rocket science. And I don't hear Fox News, with the exception of Napolitano talking a little bit about it, I think, Fox News hasn't said anything about this part. They just keep saying, well, their state constitution says the federal government owns the state of Nevada, and that's all there is to it, so he's violating that. And this, they're not talking about the Constitution. I mean, I was listening to several different shows over the past week, and they all come back and say, they're the violators. This goes from O'Reilly. O'Reilly, I think he's half communist anymore, I'll tell you. The change I have seen in O'Reilly over the years, you go and watch him when he was on the show 10 years ago, it was just totally different. Now, he's out there, yes, we're going to cave into all the illegals. Yes, we're going to give in to all this other stuff. Christians don't matter anymore, even though he claims to be one. His whole attitude is just gone. He's been converted to a communist, I think, himself. It's just nuts when you listen to him, of what he says. And I mean, he wants to talk about the truth. I never hear him talking about this truth. He's out there acting like Clive and Bundy is a nutcase. But he's not talking about the truth, what the intention was of the Constitution. I don't hear, I truly can't say I've heard anybody on Fox News, with the exception of Judge Napolitano, talk a little bit about it. But who on Fox News believes in the Constitution? And that's why you got to be, you know, I've been skeptical of Fox News for some time now, and because to me I just see them as a face to the GOP, and Murdoch, the guy who owns the thing, he doesn't believe in America either. I mean, he's fine making money here. He doesn't have a problem making money, But he believes in Common Core and he believes in amnesty for two things. You take those two things right off the top, he's not an American. Well, he doesn't believe in America. Okay, and then let's see. The other is, okay, the powers of Congress are found only in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, with the exception of the less than two dozen powers delegated to Congress found within Article 1, Section 8. Congress may make no laws, cannot form political agencies, and cannot take any action that seek to regulate outside of these few enumerated powers. When was the last time you heard any, with the exception of Judge Napolitano, when was the last time you heard anybody on Fox News talk about that? I don't even think I've heard Judge Jeanine talk about this in on the Saturday show. The powers of Congress are found only in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, with the exception of the less than two dozen powers delegated to Congress found within Article 1, Section 8. Congress may make no laws, cannot form political agencies, and cannot take any action that seek to regulate outside of these few enumerated powers. Would somebody explain to me what the Bureau of Land Management is doing? Are they there somehow trying to protect it from invasion of someone? I don't think that's what they were doing. They're trying to save a turtle. Is it the federal government's job to save a turtle, a tortoise? Is that what the government's job is? You know, the government, they refuse to secure the border, but they're going to protect the tortoise. So, how many times can you say that out loud without sounding like, how stupid can the American people be to put up with this? How stupid have we become to allow a federal government that's going to protect the tortoise but not protect the American people from invasion? Because that is what is happening. If anybody can prove to me that isn't what's happening, you know, prove it. Because right now we're being invaded on all of our borders, but especially the southern border. Everybody knows the southern border is wide open. They can just come right in. The other borders are a little bit, I wouldn't say secure by any extreme, but there's more security at the other borders. But once they get in, and even if they do come in the front door, nothing's done. There is no Homeland Security. The Department of Homeland Security is one of the biggest farces there is. They don't do anything about Homeland Security. Anybody that feels safe because of Homeland Security is drinking way too much of that Kool-Aid. Okay, let's see here. Let me go down a little bit further. Article 1, Section 8 does lay forth the possibility of federal control over some land. What land? Clause 17 defines these few exceptions. Okay, let's see here. To exercise exclusively legislation in all cases whatsoever, such as district not exceeding 10 miles square, as may by secession to particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. See, it's not for them to go and just openly own the state of Nevada or the state of California. That's not the point. It's for specific land for specific purposes. Other needful buildings. Erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. That's all they're allowed to own. That isn't what's going on in Nevada. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 is known as the Enclave Clause. The clause gives federal control over the seat of government, Washington, D.C., and the land that has been purchased by the federal government with consent of the state legislature to build military posts and other needful buildings, post office, and other structures pursuant to Article 1, Section 8. Nothing more. Being a requirement, state permission was explicitly emphasized while drafting this clause. The founders and respective states insisted with loud cries that the states must consent before the federal government could purchase lands from the states. Nowhere in this clause will you find the power for Congress to exercise legislative authority through regulation over 80% of Nevada, 55% of Utah, 45% of California, 70% of Alaska, etc., unless the state has given the federal government the formal authority to do so, which they have not. And this is where this part about the state constitution, Nevada, because it looks like that was land that was part of the federal government in the beginning until it became a territory. That's the way I'm understanding it. If a state legislature decides to sell land to the federal government, then at that point the enclave clause becomes applicable and the federal government may seize legislative and regulatory control in pursuance to the powers delegated by Article 1, Section 8. In America's infancy, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld the Founding Fathers' understanding of federal control over lands. Justice Stephen J. Field wrote for the majority opinion in Fort Leavenworth Railroad, Colorado v. Lowe, 1855, that federal authority over territorial land was necessarily paramount. However, once the territory was organized as a state and admitted to the Union on equal ground, the state government assumes sovereignty over federal lands, and the federal government retains only the rights of individual propriety. Rights of an individual proprietor, I should say, excuse me. This means the federal government could only exercise general sovereignty over state property if the state legislature formally granted the federal government the power to do so under the Enclave Clause, with the exception of federal buildings, post offices, and military installations. This understanding was reaffirmed in Lessee of Poland versus Hagen, Permoli versus Municipality Number 1 of the City of New Orleans, and Strata versus Graham. So let's see here. Through the centuries, let's go. Okay. There's quite a lengthy article here, and I'm going to have to wrap it up here in just a few minutes. But let's see. Federal Supremists sitting on the Supreme Court understood that by insidiously redefining the clause, then federal power would be expanded and conserved. And then there's several different cases. Camfield versus United States, that was 1897. Light versus United States, 1911. Klepp versus New Mexico, 1976, and multiple other cases regarding commerce, if I can talk, federal supremacists have effectively erased the constitutional guarantee of state control over property. But again, this is all a violation of the Constitution, and the Supreme Court doesn't seem to follow the Constitution either. They just go in and decide what they feel like. And you just got to wonder who's for sale on that court. I mean, look at Obamacare. Look at what Rogers did. Roberts. I'm getting everybody's name wrong tonight. Roberts did. Through the centuries, by the hand of corrupt federal judges, we arrive in the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. The Founding Fathers never imagined the citizens of a state would be subject to such treatment at the hands of the federal government. Furthermore, they certainly never imagined the state legislature themselves would allow such treatment to go unchecked. The latest updates appear to show that Bundy has won his battle against the feds for now. However, it remains a damn shame that the state of Nevada would allow for such a situation to arise in the first place. See, this is where when we say that government's out of control, the federal government's out of control, but so are the states. We have totally destroyed what we were founded upon. We're not really much of a republic anymore. And it's all because of the crooked people we allow to stay in office. And that is why May 16th is so important. That is why what happened in Nevada is so important. We are not going to be the sheeple of these tyrants. These elitists who have gotten into office, they have to be thrown out so far and so fast. They have to be removed. They are violating their oath of office. They are treasonous in their behavior. They are destroying this country. And if the American people just allow them to keep doing it, we're not going to survive much longer. We're not. You know, people sometimes think that I'm getting carried away with it or extreme, whatever. It's the truth. Seek the truth. Face the truth. And we can save our country. But if Americans keep burying their head in the sand, 9/11 really was just a fluke. Wasn't anybody trying to destroy us. And wasn't anything, you know, all the different things that you can say with why 9/11 happened. It's okay for the EPA to own all the water on this continent? Or I should say in the United States. I don't think they're going to get to own the water in Mexico or in Canada, even though they're trying to make a North American Union. They're trying to convert us into a North American Union. That's what they're trying to do, starting with George H.W. Bush with his Agenda 21 stuff and then the rest of them. If you don't believe in freedom, then fine. But, you know, you're not going to realize it. You don't seem to truly appreciate what you have today. Way too many Americans who are more focused on a stupid Super Bowl game or whatever else, NBA playoffs. Now here in Orlando, they're building a stupid soccer stadium, which nobody wants. But this is the out-of-control government. We don't care about the people. We're going to spend money and give it to our friends so that we can get rich. This is what is happening. It's happening massive here in Florida. It's happening across this country. Nevada is the proof of it. But, you know, I'm telling you, I don't care what Glenn Beck said about it. The fact that some people armed themselves to defend against a government that it was armed against the people, I don't think was wrong. I mean, and I should say, May 16th is the way to do it in the peaceful, nonviolent way. This Declaration of Administrative Revisions. We are here presenting it to this government that has no longer valid. The federal government is no longer valid. It's a fraud in every which way. These people don't honor the Constitution. They don't honor their oath of office. They are working in support of special interest to the detriment of the people who are, in fact, the government. They are a bunch of fraudsters. The fraudsters have to be sent home. Very, very few in D.C. are not fraudsters. If you get truly 5% who are not corrupt fraudsters in D.C., and in government altogether. It's, I think, maybe not quite as bad in the state, but it's bad in the states too, but I think the states, there is a little bit more when all government is local routine, when you get local, but very little. The political parties have totally corrupted the election process, and we see more and more Americans running for office today versus Republicans and Democrats. People are getting sick of the political parties because they're so corrupt. They corrupt those that are in office. They turn these people into fraudsters for their own benefit. They sacrifice the American people and this country. This is what's happening. But May 16th. And I mean, if you haven't read them, haven't seen it yet, please go out there, do a search on Declaration of Administrative Revision, effective May 16th, 2014. And it's got quite a bit of information here. I'm going to try to read it maybe on Monday's show. I've got to go into it. I want people to know what it is. If you can't find it, let me know. Send me an email to AmericanStatesman@1791.com, and I'll send you the link to it. You have got to understand, we are going there. This is a legal action against a fraudulent government. The federal government is a fraud in every which way. Its acts are to the point of being treason. We have every right to remove these people out of office, but there's no reason to bring the guns. I'm sure some people will bring guns anyway. I hope they don't. They shouldn't, because we are going through the proper procedure. This is the process for us to take back the government from those, the fraudsters who have taken over it. It is our government, not theirs. And a corrupt election does not change that. The elections are corrupt. The elections promote the fraud. So the truth is we need to go after these political parties as well. They are the fraud. Everything Washington warned us about. President Washington, in that farewell address, said the political parties will divide us as a country. Associations and factions will divide us. We will not be united. The will of a few will usurp the will of the people. The will of the people will be taken for the will of the party. These are all things he said and warned us about, and that's where we're at. So if we don't have a peaceful revolution, and some people don't want to call it a revolution, whatever, if we do not peacefully get these people out of office through this Declaration of Administrative Revision, then we truly cease to exist as a country. The sovereignty of the United States is gone. When we no longer control the government, when we, the people who own the government, are the government, have no control over the government, then we're not we're not the United States of America. We're not a sovereign government anymore. And people just need to think about what that really means. That's the truth. And let's see, on that note, excuse me, the other thing I wanted to go ahead and mention is right here in Florida, which, okay, actually, before I do that, there was still much more to read on this one article. Let me see if I can get you the information. Okay. About author Michael Lofty is a Persian-American political analyst and advisor living in Nashville, Tennessee, where he works as the executive director for the 10th Amendment. And you can go to see this, go to humansarefree.com. That's the website, humansarefree.com. And then you'll see the article, The Bundy Ranch Crisis, Who Owns America? That's where I was getting this information. There was an email that was sent to me from this site, and I didn't cover all of it, but I did cover most of it. But you can go out there and read more of it. And I'm going to be sending this with a note to Glenn Beck because he doesn't want to promote violence. That's all fine and dandy. But yet he proudly supports the Second Amendment. He proudly supports that we defend ourselves against a tyrannical government, but yet he didn't want to do that there. I don't understand. I get this weird bipolar feeling about the way he's acted on this thing. It's fine to say that you don't promote the violence, try to do it peacefully, but it's another thing when you see an army, the federal government, putting its own BLM army together to go out there and destroy or kill Americans. Glenn, are you really suggesting that Americans stand there and be shot by this bureau of unelected public servants? For what reason? I don't know. I wish you would explain why he thinks it's okay for Americans to be defenseless when the government is obviously armed against the people. And that's what the whole point is here. The government, the federal government, was armed against the American people. The American people were protecting and defending themselves. I think that's what makes us different than what he keeps trying to say it is. And the fact that Fox News doesn't want to talk about any of those facts tells you more about Fox News. It really does. I'd love to hear an honest debate of people who genuinely believe in the Constitution to try to debate this issue and justify anything the federal government has done in this case, justify the rights of the federal government to own 87% of the state of Nevada. I don't see how that can be. The other is, here, once again, you know, one of my pet peeves is transportation, massive corruption in transportation across this whole country. But, of course, Florida is always, as usual, is one of the ringleaders of it. Massive corruption in Florida transportation. And we now have another corrupt transit authority. This is the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. That's under investigation for inappropriate use of tax dollars to the tune of $800,000. Don't think I'm going to have quite enough time to really get into that one. Let me see if I can find this really quick just to give a little bit on it. The basic on it is Watchdog is the one who published this article. Let's see here. Watchdog, and yeah, it was William Patrick with Florida Watchdog who put this article out there, And so Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority is under investigation. And we have the Ken Welch, chairman of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority, who is the director of it. Let's see if I can get back up here. Yeah, because I want to make sure I get this part in. The Florida, of course, the Florida Department of Transportation is about as corrupt as it gets, too, so it's always interesting when you see their name on something like this. The Florida Department of Transportation launched, I don't know if I could ever get this thing to stay the way I want it. And, of course, the Transit Authority has denied any wrongdoing. The Florida Department of Transportation launched a formal inquiry on Thursday into the Pinellas County Area Transit Authority's use of $800,000 in operating funds supplied through property taxes. Now, get that, property taxes by people who may or may not use the Transit Authority, in all likelihood don't use it, or use it very rarely, to advertise a $1.7 billion light rail plan that hinges on area taxpayers voting themselves the highest sales tax rate in the state. This is where, again, you've got the out-of-control government, the corruption, the fraud is at the state and local level. This was Pinellas County, Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority doing this, using tax dollars to go out and promote a light billion-dollar, $1.7 billion light rail system that has nothing to do with transportation. We're going to see Scam Rail here in Central Florida is going to be a ghost train. No one's going to be on it. The hassle of it isn't going to be worth it. The people who are disabled who can't drive aren't going to be able to use it. It's nothing but a moneymaker for Congressman John Mica and CSX and all his cronies. But that's what it is. We have a bunch of fraudsters in Congress. We have a bunch of fraudsters in state legislatures. And we have got to get rid of the fraudsters. And as I said on the recent show, transportation, as anybody knows, transportation is my pet peeve. That's how I got involved with corrupt government to begin with, when I saw how corrupt everything to do with growth management and transportation is destroying so much of our livelihood, our quality of life, our economy, and everything they're doing with it. It's just so disgusting. So I am going to be looking into the options of using the common law grand jury to investigate and go after these corrupt agencies and the people involved. I want to know if you're interested in doing that. If you're interested in participating in this process, I need you to send me an email, AmericanStatesman@1791.com, and just put a note in there saying, yes, you want to get involved in stopping the corruption in transportation. We want to take back our highways. We want to cancel boondoggle rail projects that are just for CSX and the likes of John Mica and the cronies like him. So we've got to do that. But I can't do it alone. I need help. And this is all massively part of regionalism. What they're doing with the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority right now, making it a regional authority, it's known for the corruption. It's nothing but corrupt. And yet they're going to go and give it control over all of Central Florida. Not just the Orlando-Orange County piece of it. It's a fraud against the people. It's a crime against the people. And we, the people, have to come together and go after them. So I'm going to make that a big effort, and I'll have a show just on that at some point here. But I do need to know if you're serious about stopping corruption and fraud in transportation. And on that note, I have one last joke here. I have gotten several inquiries. I work in IT. And I've gotten several referrals for a senior toll analyst here at Adkins in Orlando, Florida. And I think it might be something I should get into. If anybody would like, go ahead and tell Adkins that you think I should be one of their toll analysts. Go for it. By the way, Adkins is the former PBJS, whatever the other company was, that was shut down because of fraud in Texas and whatever else. But now it's a UK company. We don't have any American companies that can do this kind of stuff. So it's another farce, another fraud on the American people. We really got to get together and stop the crap. Okay, with that being said, we are ready to go to our 8 o'clock spot, which is Smart Talk Election 2014, Know Your Candidates, with Sherry Smart and Neil Rice. And I'm going to go ahead and get them on here. And we have our first guest, one of the candidates, and I will let Sherry Smart introduce the first candidate. Sherry, are you there?
Yeah. Do you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Yep.
Welcome.
Right. This is Sherry Smart with Smart Talk and co-host Neil Rice. And tonight's guest is Dr. Julio Gonzalez. He's an MD in Sarasota County. He's a practicing orthopedic surgeon. He just finished law school. He's putting his toe into the, for the first time, in the political arena, and he's running for office in the state of Florida as a state representative. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you for coming on. Dr. Gonzalez and I did another show for about an hour, and it flew by. This man is so chock full of information. And what we want to do as responsible voters is we want to listen to all the candidates, see what they're standing for, ask some questions, and then lend some support. Once we see a candidate out there that we think is actually going to do his job, his due diligence, and represent us, then it's up to us as voters to get out there and do everything we can to support him. I want him to go ahead and give some background about what he's doing, what he plans to do once he's in office, and what prompted him. I mean, my gosh, this is a man who has a thriving practice as an orthopedic surgeon. What would possess him to do something so insane and go into political office? So I'll let you tell people what motivated you to jump into the fray.
Well, before starting, I want to pause and let everybody remind everybody that today is Holy Thursday. And
yes,
I want to wish everybody a blessed and happy Holy Thursday, and to our Jewish friends, a very holy Passover.
Thank you.
As far as why I'm here and why I'm seeking office and why I'm engaging your listeners, it's very simple. It's because there's been an incredible assault, and you know, if you wanted to narrow it down to the very essence, to me, it was healthcare. It was an assault on healthcare. But as I moved on and I grew and I studied and I learned, I realized that the assault wasn't really on healthcare. It's really on all of our liberties. And I think that one of the major reasons why that assault is taking place is because far too few of us who are capable and able to serve our communities and to serve our republic by way of stepping up and letting our voices be heard in the legislature are not doing that. And I think that's part of the reason why you see a lot of, you know, lifelong politicians and people who are removed from the grips, if you will, of the people acting in ways that are contrary to the interests of the people. So as I saw Doug Holder's seat opening up, as you know and maybe some of your listeners may know, our district, District 74, has been faithfully served by Representative Holder for the past 7 years. He is terming out, and that seat is now open, and I felt that the only responsible thing for me to do, an appropriate thing for me to do, is to step up and let the people consider me as a viable candidate for serving their interests in Tallahassee.
And are you following anything about what's happening out with the Bundy Ranch? Are you following that at all?
With the which ranch?
The Bundy Ranch out in Nevada. Have you seen anything on that?
Oh, yes. Oh, I have followed that immensely. I think that was a wonderful win for personal liberties and property rights. It is a product of an EPA gone wild and a federal government that has become brazen and arrogant in its discharge of its duties and in expansion of its duties. Now, it's not over, and I'm so glad that those ranchers and those property owners and all the people here there in the locality, in the community, stood up to the over-aggressive incursion of the federal government. But it's not over. I've read some news reports about the federal government planning their next phase of their assault on these people's liberties. But yes, I have followed it very carefully, and I am intrigued as to how this will play out, and in particular, the implications that this has on our rights as citizens throughout the rest of the country.
Well,
can I jump in here?
Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah,
so.
Before we get too far into something else, I would like to bring it to his attention, if he doesn't already know, and the listeners, mainly because he wants to go to Tallahassee, and you're in my prayers, and if I could vote for you, you're not in my district, I would. But I want everyone to be aware of the fact that the Sahara Club, an environmental group, is right behind this, has been for years, and pushing this. And they are very strong in the state of Florida with their agenda that they have, and they do have direct connection with the United Nations, along with the Nature Conservancy. So if you should win, be
right.
Very careful of these groups.
Well, when
they,
he wins, he's going to need people like you and Sally and many others out there to give him, you know, the latest and greatest information so that he won't be deceived by the lobbyists that have all the influence and money in the world. And you know that's going to happen, Dr. Gonzalez. The moment you take the oath of office, those guys are right in line next to you to shake your hand and grease it with some favors and promises. So
well, we
understand
we talked,
what you're going to be dealing with.
Sure. We talked about this before, and one of the things that we talked about in our prior radio conversation was how I fully expect be thoroughly disappointed with what I'm going to learn and see in Tallahassee about how government works how laws are made and the various interplays of the various interests. And I'm prepared for that largely because of my experience watching it from the outside in as a concerned citizen. So I'm not going to be surprised by those forces that that you speak about. However, you know, I think the more important thing in approaching any legislation and any rule and any regulation that whether it be federal, whether it be federal or a municipality or any such body is, you know, you got to sit down and you have to, once everybody and all the noise is separated away from you, you have to sit down and make an honest assessment of the issue before you. And one of the things that's important to know is that there's nothing that's going to come up, or very few anyway, things that are going to come up that do not represent a balance and a decision between competing forces. And they're going to be valid forces to a certain extent. But in the end, you have to have a principled legislator, one that will not be unduly swayed by not necessarily the arguments. The arguments are very important that our legislators be swayed by, but by undue and unfair influences, and make an honest assessment of what's best for his constituency, her constituency, the state of Florida, and, of course, always our great republic, the United States of America. And that's how I intend to approach all these problems, whether there are lobbyists involved or no lobbyists involved. I think the bottom line is no matter what the decision is, it requires an honest assessment and study on my part, and then make a decision on what I feel is best for our constituents and our country.
And then let your listeners know, Dr. Gonzalez, exactly when you get into office, what boards and organizations you're going to be taking over.
Well, that is really up to the speaker of each session. So I just because Doug Holder may serve in a certain committee, and I'm hopefully going to be taking over for his seat, it does not necessarily place me on any of his committees. Obviously, I have certain strengths, and my greatest strength, of course, is this deep understanding of healthcare and how healthcare is delivered. And so I would think that a logical place to place me is in some of the healthcare committees. The Healthcare Appropriations Committee is one that comes to mind. I would love to have spent my adult life, the majority of my adult life, in one educational capacity or another. So I certainly believe that some sort of educational committee would probably be somewhere where I could serve and actually offer something positive to the people. So, I mean, those are at least a couple of things. I have a great interest on water use and land use, And so I would be very happy to serve in some of our water use committees and issues of that nature. But in the end, it will be up to this, and it'll be up to the assets available to him or her during that legislative session.
Well, I could see where you'd be a huge benefit to the healthcare delivery. What would you change? You know, if, say you don't get elected, but you let's pretend you're there. And you do get the pick. The speaker does say, okay, we're going to put you in healthcare delivery. What would you do with that?
I think the first thing, well, for Florida, let's back up a little bit and remember that Florida and the states are primarily responsible for their Medicaid provisions. So I think the major program that needs to be reviewed from a state side is Medicaid. And I think there's a host of inefficiency and a plethora of corruption and abuse of how Medicaid health care is delivered. And so I think the first thing that I would do is I would take a good close look at the administrative issues relating to Medicaid. I would really try to cut down, streamline the amount of paperwork and the amount of work that healthcare providers have to provide just to be able to get a single test delivered by for their patients. And of course, that's already assuming that the patient got through the door. There's also a host of problems with Medicaid patients accessing care that need to be addressed. So I think, you know, if you told me the one area within healthcare that I would devote most of my time, and I can assure you it would take at least the full complement of 8 years of serving to address, that effort would be Medicaid.
And as an added bonus for you, though, you have input with your spouse because she also is an MD.
Yes, she's a gynecologist.
Right. So once you're in office, she's also going to be giving you current, up-to-date data on what's happening with her as well and her patients.
Oh, there's a whole host of friends and associates that I have that are able to give me insights in their particular fields. They're a phone call away. Let's remember that I have lived in 5 cities throughout the state of Florida, so I have friends that I have worked with and colleagues that I have associated with, and not just in the private sector. I've worked I served in the military, so I actually got to work in the military healthcare system and see the VA system from inside out. And so I have not only associates, but I have insights, direct experiences in all those various ranges of our healthcare system here in Florida that I think will serve me well.
Absolutely. And as we discussed in a prior interview, staff, we were talking about what happens in Tallahassee with staff and what happens locally with staff, that so many people that are elected to office defer to staff, and staff basically takes over and does all the writing and the manipulation of what really goes on. So when you're new, brand new, I would imagine that there would not be much you would do for a couple of months as you're getting your feet on the ground and assessing your staff.
Not if I have my way with it. I plan on hitting the ground running. I would imagine that the only thing that can slow me down is some of the entrenched folks there not wanting me to participate, but I think it's going to be so obvious very early in my, and I know that this doesn't sound very humble, but in my opinion, I think it's going to be so obvious that I have a lot to contribute and I'm going to be a valuable asset to my fellow legislators that I fully believe and intend to hit the ground running from day one. I don't think that there's a minute to spare. And, you know, I have already demonstrated by going through law school while maintaining a practice and driving to Stetson an hour away 3 or 4 times a week and studying for the bar that I will learn very quickly what the procedures and what the rules are and the substantive issues and deliver from the beginning. So from my side of the house, I am planning on going in there sprinting, and hopefully others will follow. And if not, well, then we're going to have to try to do whatever they can to slow me down, but I'm not intending to yield.
Great. And how is the campaign going for you in Sarasota?
I think the campaign's coming wonderfully. I think that this campaign is one that has really sparked the imagination of many of our constituents here. I have been a member of this community for the past 10 years as a doctor, but I've also been a member of the community here as an advocate. And at one time before I got into law school, and that kind of slowed me down a little bit, but for a while I was a very vocal and very public advocate, appearing before rallies and writing my book on healthcare reform and speaking about the ills of Obamacare before it even got its name. So I think a lot of my friends and neighbors and people who are just following, who are concerned about political issues, are really intrigued about what this fellow advocate, fellow concerned citizen, would be able to accomplish if he were able to go to Tallahassee and serve in public office. So I think that angle of my private life has really served to motivate others to learn more about me and to fancy in them the ability to dream of the possibilities of what may come.
Very well said. And now, if someone's listening out there wants to contribute to your campaign or volunteer, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is just to email. Shoot me an email, and the email address is Julio Gonzalez Campaign, and it's one big word, J-U-L-I-O, for Julio. Gonzalez is G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z. My last name is L-E-Z at the end. Campaign, all one big word, Julio Gonzalez Campaign at gmail.com. I look at that email personally. I respond to those emails personally, and so far I'm proud to boast that I have a pretty good track record of responding and reading my emails. I'm looking forward to being overwhelmed soon, but at least for now, I'm doing a great job at keeping up. In terms of contributing, contributions can be made by check to Julio Gonzalez Campaign. They can mail that to P.O. Box 595 at Venice, Florida 34284. Sorry about that. 34284.
Okay. So if anybody needs information, if that was too windy or and you didn't get it, you can also email us here at smarttalkblogtalk@yahoo.com, and I'll get you all that information.
Absolutely,
now,
and I look forward to hearing from all your readers, from all your listeners.
You're right, and we've only got about 12 more minutes with you, so I wanted to go ahead and talk about some other issues that you're handling. We talked about all the things that we're concerned with, smart meters, you know, dealing with the PSC, Common Core, dealing with how our children are being indoctrinated in our schools, and many other issues. I don't know what you personally could do once you're in office on those subjects, but at least we know that you're aware of them.
Well, so absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah. So once you're in office, I'm asking a stupid question. How effective are you actually going to be? Because I think that's what most voters now are looking at, the effectiveness of our elected officials.
Well, that's a great question, and I think time will tell. I think there are people who have a knack for making their points and making an argument and making it forcefully. I think I'm one of those. I also think that another attribute that needs to be present in our legislators is an ability to get along with others and an ability to make others understand that we're in this together. And a lot of this vitriol that's been going on in our legislatures, both, you know, at the state and particularly at the federal level, is completely unnecessary and counterproductive. I firmly believe that if you look at the problems and if you really peel down the problems to their core and you ask the question, how can we solve this one particular problem? I think more often than not, we find that the solutions are either variations of the same theme or everybody's kind of, the majority are agreeing on a particular, an obvious answer. So I think if you can have a legislator that has the ability to peel it back and drone down straight to the essence of the issue and in a non-intimidating way and in an inviting way, encourage his colleagues to participate in the problem-solving process and everybody move together as a group, I think you're going to have an incredibly effective legislator. Now, that legislator cannot be meek and cannot be shy, and Lord knows I'm none of those. So I think I have the qualities that would at least set me up for potentially being a very effective and very successful legislator, and that's what I intend to at least try to do. And then, of course, the rest of the story will be told over time, and we'll let the people decide what they think about my performance.
Absolutely. And then you just said you finished up getting your law degree.
And I learned that I passed the bar just the day before yesterday.
Wow, congratulations.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I was very confident very early. I was very confident that I was going to be able to get through law school. I knew it was going to be difficult. It was going to be Herculean, but I knew that I could do it. The bar exam was an entirely different situation. That was one of the most intimidating, most daunting tasks I think I've ever had to do, particularly because I continue to practice, I continue to serve my community, I continue to take that 2 o'clock in the morning phone call about somebody with a broken hip that needed to be seen or whatever the case may be. And despite all that, somehow I managed to pass that bar, and I am so tickled that I was able to do that, and I've called it the biggest miracle since the Americans defeating the Russians in the 1972 Olympics in hockey.
So how did you celebrate once you found out you passed?
I just stared at the computer, leaned back against the chair, and felt the pressure drain from my shoulders.
Oh,
I mean, it was just a moment of peace and tranquility. And then it was back to work. I've got a lot of things to do. I've unfortunately, part of the consequences of trying to achieve these incredibly large tasks and prepare myself for battle is how I view this. The drawback of that is that you know, it's time spent and other things fall behind. So now it's time to catch up on the other things. So as soon as I took that deep breath and just marveled at the significance of the accomplishment, I just, you know, dusted myself off and back to work I went.
And what an example to you two girls. I mean, they've got to be sitting back and watching you and your wife both.
You know, we were in Mass right now. We were in Mass. And I left Mass early to come to the radio show. And so we were actually sitting in Mass right before, you know, this radio show. And my daughter was seated three people away. And I was really touched because she leaned forward and she said, "Can I sit next to you?"
Aww.
And I said, "Of course." And then she got up. She goes all the way. I told her, "I'm leaving early." And she goes, "No, no problem." She comes around. She just wanted to sit next to me, and she held my hand. And it was one of those moments where you realize that girl, that's my older daughter, and she's about to go to the Manhattan School of Music this August. And it's just one of those moments that you realize that your children do look up to you and look for you for strength, and there's a certain comfort in a parent that shows love for their children, and it really hit palpably when I was in Mass here right before coming to the show.
Well, and there's another thing the listeners need to know about you, that you pray daily. You start your day in prayer. And
I go every morning to Mass. When my OR schedule allows, on Mondays I do surgery at 7:30 in the morning, so I can't go to 7 o'clock Mass. But practically every other day I start my day with Mass and receiving the Word of God and just listening to a couple of Bible readings before starting your day is one of the most enriching and invigorating things. And I strongly recommend, no matter what faith anybody in any of your listeners are, if you can possibly fit that 30-minute session and that 30-minute service, whatever it may be, do it, because it keeps you well-grounded. There's so many forces that try to push us away from what's right and try to make us forget that we are here to serve our Lord and to do God's work here on earth. And yeah, we need that daily bolus to keep us grounded.
Well, and I think also it gives you clarity and humbles you so that you realize there's a higher authority in charge here, folks, and that, you know, whether you have attained getting a law degree or getting your MD or being elected to a high office in government, that ultimately there is someone else out there that's much higher than you that you're going to have to, there will be a day of reckoning that you will have to have an accounting. And that, knowing that and knowing that you know that, makes everybody breathe a little easier. Because right now we're seeing, and I know you saw it at the Bundy Ranch, it's just an example of the lawlessness that supposedly are supposed to be lawmakers.
And there's a brazenness to it that
right.
That is almost, I was listening to Charles Krauthammer earlier today, and he said that the brazenness with which Obama had spoken was almost admirable. And I said, I'm going to remember that. I'm going to use that one of these days when the time is right. But it's absolutely true. It takes a lot of work to be as brazen as some of these administrative officials and some of our legislators, particularly on the federal side of the House, are acting. It's just it's unconscionable. And like I said at the very beginning, it's the root cause of my having to feel compelled to take some time away from the normal progression of my career and go out there and serve my people and, in essence, serve my children. Because this is not necessarily about what's going on today. This is about what's going on throughout all of posterity and what we're going to leave behind to our kids. And I'm gravely concerned about that.
Well, and as you should be, and thank God that you understand that, because right now you are making history. This is a very pivotal moment in our country, in our nation, and what we do and the leaders that we choose is so monumental right now. That's why I implore everyone to really vet your candidates, really find out what they stand for. You know, I'm going to speak on behalf of Dr. Gonzalez. He did not pat me, but I'm going to say this. You know, it's refreshing to have an individual that has such a hectic personal life and private life to step out of his comfort zone and do something like this, because it's massive and it's monumental, and you're going to come across forces that are against you. And it really sets your family up for a lot of examination, self-examination. It takes a lot of courage, sir, to do what you're doing, and I really admire you, and I'm proud that you and hopefully more like you will do what you are doing. Step out of your comfort zone, run for that office. I'm tired of people that are in office forever and ever and ever, and I really think that they need to just serve their term and go away.
Well, those are beautiful words and very kind words, and I appreciate them, but, you know, the bottom line is consider the alternative. Consider not doing it. And, you know, there's some courage and there's some strength and there's some amount of just raw determination to go ahead and stand up and do this. But consider the road we will continue to go down if we don't stand up. And that, if you look at the flip side of that coin, I think it makes it very easy to make that decision.
Yeah, and thank goodness that you're doing it, and hopefully people will get in touch with you and volunteer. And I know that your schedule's just been unbelievable. And anything that we can do, please don't hesitate to call on us. If you need us to send out, you know, Facebook things, make phone calls, go knock on doors, just give us a holler, and we'll be glad to lend a hand.
Thank you, Sherry. I greatly appreciate the opportunity for you that you have given me to speak before your listeners.
Oh, and thank you so much, Dr. Gonzalez, and God bless.
Thank you.
Yes,
God bless
you.
God bless you both.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dr. Julio Gonzalez, who's running in the state of Florida for a state representative position. This is his first venture into politics, and we wish him well, and we hope that many others like him start stepping up because we need them now more than ever. And hopefully we have our next guest on the line, Chris Kay from Nevada. Are you there, Chris?
Well, I am, although generally Chris Harold is my lawful name, and I don't frequently exercise my legal name, but that's okay. You know, when we use our family name, it doesn't really belong to us. It belongs to our family tribe, and it's a spiritual element to our name that we're not supposed to bandy about unlightly.
Right.
Although they don't teach us many of these. Yeah, they don't teach us these things.
Exactly. Chris is going to give us a tutorial this evening, so I'm hoping that everybody will grab a notebook and a pen, and you better write really fast. He was telling me something the other night, and he said, Sherry, if you're talking to me, you better be recording this thing, girl, because I'm a slow writer. So he's going to give us a wealth of information, and Chris, the show is yours from now until 9.
Well, all right. I'll try to do you proud, Sherry, and try to teach a little bit and educate the listeners on some of the critical-to-know aspects requiring land ownership, true land ownership, in America. Our founders were really wise and exceptionally learned intellectual men, that many of them spoke multiple languages. They wrote in multiple different languages and dialects. They really were way beyond what we do in this day and time with their McGuffey's readers and other sources of just foundational materials that were used to really teach the people and children of America the necessary educational aspects, spiritual aspects, financial aspects, and entrepreneurial aspects that they needed for America to survive on its own within and not be subservient and dependent on our foreign enemies for our sustenance. And so we look then to how does America gain control and administratorship or management of lands? And there are only two methods provided for under the scope of international law of contracts from Vattel. And those are, one is by treaty. That is a contract or compact, if you will, between international sovereigns and the community of the international sovereign nations of the world, whereby by their sovereign power, or sovereign, the etymology of the word, sov means self, and reign means to rule, regulate, control, administer, or self-control. And in the contemplations of the founders, we the people were sovereigns without servants, and supposed to self-regulate, rule our own interest of ourself, and be good servants unto the Creator. So, if the international sovereign nations, under the law of contracts and their ability to contract unlimited, as the supreme law of the land in treaties, then treaty is one methodology that America has to tend to obtain lands to control on their own. Pardon my imprudence and misspeaking there. I'll try to be correct and not make too many mistakes tonight. But treaty is a very, very solemn document, and each treaty that America has, we have multiples. We have the Treaty of Sangre de Cristo that covers New Mexico, Colorado, parts of Utah, and beyond. We have the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. I happen to know specifically that is 9 statutes at large, 922, and that was obtained on the cessations of the war between North America and South America, and the Mexican-American War, it's called, when the plenipotentiaries of Mexico came to agreement with the plenipotentiaries of America, and they reached agreement on a contract to sell the most of the desert southwest from Arizona west to California to America for the sum of 13.2 million proximal. I don't recall the precise amount, but it was in gold bullion and specie in coin, lawful coin of the realm, lawful monum, not to be confused with Federal Reserve debt notes of usury that we use today, to the Mexicans in gold, in, like I say, in gold. And it was satisfied in full. We had great luck in the gold fields here in Georgia and Idaho, Oregon, other states, producing metals that gave us great power and wealth in the community of nations of the world. The other methodology that America has to obtain ownership of property is by war prize, empire building, if you would like to call it that. The only one that we have that falls into that description is Hawaii. So this is very important because each treaty is a contract of its own with particularly language codicils, controlling clauses of contract that operate on the contract and dictate what the owners of lands that are derived into that contract must ascribe to. So the law of the treaty or the terms of the treaty flow with the contract, the treaty, to the heirs or assigns, grant those that the would inherit, barter, sell, or be gifted or contractually obtain an interest in. And a perfect example of that was the government created a railroad called the Union Pacific. It was supposed to be for the benefit of the people with the private contractors. And, of course, like most government projects, it failed miserably between all the cronyism within and the insider trading and special advantage seized upon by the mercenaries within the government under their contractual schemes. It went bust, bankrupt, and it was purchased under bankruptcy by the Santa Fe Pacific Railroad, later the Burlington Northern Santa Fe now, and it still exists today. And under the contemplation of the founders to achieve the manifest destiny of America and to convey to interested parties and intrepid adventurers lands in the western half to promote western expansion, they did engage in that building of that railroad, traverse the east to the west to interconnect, to make the access to the west and the development of our resources internally, domestically, some would call it, within our own capabilities of management and control, and thereby not be reliant on our enemies of foreign nations to provide those particular metals, foods, minerals, and other things that we needed to be self-reliant, productive, and entrepreneurial, and to develop technology for our own expansion and doing marketing to others around the world. Of course, we might want to note here that the word commerce has some fairly interesting etymological emanations. When we consider the word com, meaning from, of, for, or by, and merc, M-E-R-C, with an E on it, merc. Merc comes from the mercurial, Mercury the planet, one of the war destroyer planets, and mercenary, or merchant, which really tells you that commerce is a form of war, or at least a predatory adventure where one may adopt the robes or disguise of a merchant to commit war against those that he markets to and provides him special access to his intended victims or countries he wishes to conquer by infiltration and invasion. Perhaps under disguise like a Trojan horse. So there's a precise case called Chisholm, C-H-I-S-H-O-L-M, versus Georgia, which is probably the black letter foundational concrete case, the stare decisis, or stare decisis, they sometimes call it, which are the cases that are well decided that will not be reevaluated without some really substantial reason forever. And it's one of the very, very strongest cases. It has a brother case later on that was from 18, 64, 65, 66, along there, and it concerned the southern states, which had already been readmitted under the Union of States post-Civil War incursions, occupancy, and militarism, although the carpetbaggers of the North went down to the South and tried to steal and buy for cents on the dollar properties that had been burned to the ground under the wars, incursions, and the Revolution. And it was really a horrific thing because they put military officers in the seats of power to take over the southern governments and put their officers under military control. They call it de facto, by the de facto, the force of arms, placing their military rulers in the seats of qualified elected state officios that had been elected by the people in their states to present their own interest and to provide certain supervisory overseeing of what went on in their states. And that's how they forced through what were called the Reformation of Government Acts. They call them the Reformation Acts, but they really reformed government and changed it to a new form, a foreign form of government, which we suffer with today. Okay, so these lands that were granted to heirs or assigns, sometimes they were military heroes, sometimes they were private corporations like railroads for building a railroad. Interesting, they received a checkerboard fashion of every other square on opposite sides of the railroad track, 11 miles both ways, 22 miles in total, for the completion of the railroad to the West Coast. And it was really quite an undertaking and quite an accomplishment to do so, but that's how they got to have a very large chunk of land. Now, if there were pre-existing lands that already had housing interest, business interest, cities, or other particularly desirable aspects to them, they could have been exchanged, and it might make an alteration in some chances for those checkerboard fashions of lands to be owned by the interest that developed them for the government and for the beneficent interest of we the people. So they created this scheme of absorbing lands into the government that put the western states in a clearly distinctive disparity and a disadvantage to their eastern states that they should have been under equal access to justice and fairness under the law contemplations, where they had to cede or convey the lands that were unassigned, unused, occupied, homesteaded, patented, claimed, or otherwise being employed in the West to the federal government as a condition of statehood called the Cessional Acts, where you would cede those unassigned lands to the federal government. Well, in the Bundy's case in particular, there's some very curious, odd, and quirky circumstances that operate here that transmit a very special jurisdictional question and contemplation about the lands that are in question with the Bundys, which he has maintained in every case that he's brought before these courts. It is worthy to note that when you have federal judges, there was a swaparoo, a presto changeo, abracadabra, a magical transmutation of the common law American courts of we the people, where the trial by jury of the peers were the people who lived within the lands that had the ability to rule the facts, law, and evidence, guilt or innocence of the subject being examined under the law. And the judge was supposed to be a mere third party, we'll call him a referee or an intervener, that would explain if there were questions of law that the jury needed clarification on to be able to properly make the determination of guilt or innocence of the accused, who must have done some sort of horrific injury or damage to person or private property, murder, rape, robbery, arson, theft. Those types of things were generally what were considered to be breaking law back then, and that breaks the Creator's law and the natural law of land. But they did a wham-bang switcheroo on the American people, and in 1866, under the amendment to the 1789 Judiciary Act, they transmuted the small d, small c district courts of the U.S., the absolute natural general justice courts of the land, under the common law with lawful justices, not mere magistrates posing as justices, appointed for life tenured appointments at the hand and seal of the POTUS with the confirmation by the House and the Senate, to life tenured appointments enjoying compensations not diminished while under good behavior. So they were quite powerful positions as the Supreme Court and the district courts of the land. But when the Reformation Act of Government, you know, we're talking 1866, a few years after the Civil War, changed that and they made them the United States District Court instead of the district courts of the U.S. that had formerly been the Supreme Courts of the land, they changed the nature of law. It became a foreign form of law to the American form of law contemplated by our wise and learned founders of the American justice system of jurisprudence in the 1789s and before under the Articles of Confederation and other contemplations of self-governance that we tried to implement for the equal access to justice and fairness here in America under our American natural, the Creator's common law of the land. And they put in a different form of law, a foreign form of law. And it's really, really quite treacherous what was done to the American people. Later on, they did the 1871 D.C. Incorporations Act, where they set up the corporation in the South, in Maryland and Virginia, by the assignment of lands or gifting, or perhaps there might have been some compensation in some manner to some for the transmittal of those lands to Corp U.S. to set up the 10 Mile Square, which was Washington, D.C., for the purposes of corporate government of doing business with foreign nations. In the Bundy's case, in Nevada did not exist prior to 1864. Originally, the Utah Territory, the western half of Utah Territory, encompassed a large part of what is present-day Nevada, is the Sierra Nevada Range, later transmuted to the Sierra Nevada Territory, and they had sent a judicial officer, a district court judge from Utah Territory, to act as the administrator, to administer and to rule over the creation of the new area of the Sierra Nevada Territory, which was still under Utah's control. Some of the people in that area thought they should be different, and they started making plans to petition for statehood and to become their state of their own. However, there were only 10 counties or areas of land in Nevada that were under this original contemplation of the state being created by those, we'll call them entrepreneurs and governors and county supervisors and movers and shakers of their time that wanted to create their own state and be separate from Utah. So in 1864, under President Lincoln's administration, some say treacherous and treasonous, he's also known as Abraham Springsteen. His mother was particularly a Jesuit, and these things do operate on what's happened in our country and why some people wanted to wipe him out. He double-crossed the bankers and started to print greenbacks, if you prefer to call them that, and they promptly put him away because he double-crossed the global elite gangster banksters that wanted America to be enslaved by debt through usury, through using their central government-controlled notes. So back to Nevada and the creation of the state. It only originally incorporated the first 10 counties in the north, and I happen to have those here pretty close, if I can find them. They missed me. I had them here in front of me. Lander lion, nigh, lion, Esmeralda, story. That's all I can think of off the top of my head. I apologize. But it definitely did not include the lower half of the state, because the lower half of the state was originally part of New Mexico Territory, later Arizona Territory, later the Arizona Republic, and following that, the state of Arizona. And the state of Arizona wasn't a state until 1913, although coincidentally they had petitioned for statehood in 1910. Whenever the U.S. offered them statehood, they couldn't get the people in the state to agree to the terms of the contract, and perhaps the secessional acts requiring the cedings of unassigned lands of the state to the United States Corporation at that time, because the 1871 D.C. Incorporations Act had created the corporate beast that we deal with today, that sits on top of the de jure offices of government that we had originally set forth and has overlaid them and usurpated, unlawfully seized control, and been a flip-flop on the American people, tricked them, fooled them, and we live in a matrixal, fictional existence that nothing is what it seems today. The form of law changed significantly because originally we were all presumed to be innocent until proven guilty by a juror of our peers on presentment of a bill of claims for injury or criminal felony law violations that would have been adjudicated by a jury of your peers. And if they had the evidence to prove that you were the guy that committed the crime and that you did the actual injury to the person or property of another, you could be found guilty and hung by the neck until dead or other means of dispatching one from existence on this planet and life form. So, when we contemplate that the southern half of the lands of Nevada never belonged to Nevada up until at least the 1900s, and the Bundys specifically had been working those lands in a continuous fashion since somewhere between the 1860s and the 1870s, it was free open range land. They did acquire ownership of water rights to a significant portion of the water underneath there, in very close contact to the Virgin Muddy River that's in the area. In fact, it runs right through their land. There's a little bridge down the hill from where the encampment presently is that is that river, and it's very close to the entrance gate to Bundy's Ranch property. And I believe they do, in fact, hold some sort of ownership interest to that property. I'm not clear yet what that status is. It's something I'm looking into, but I haven't been able to ascertain, so I can't speak to it clearly and concisely. I can only say that they have a homestead built on that land that they've occupied continuously since sometime in the 1800s. But by being good stewards of the land, maintaining, building water infrastructure to serve the animals, including their cattle that they bred and raised on the land, other animals, deer, elk, or whatever else exists in the area, I'm sure had access to that water and consumed it. They maintained the land, kept it well kept up. They kept the water pipes built and continued to build new infrastructure pipes to provide more water feeding areas for stock around the large expanse of free range area. So by sweat of their brow and the fruits of their private labors, they developed a tacit presumptive interest that is inescapable and irrefutable through managing those lands as good managers, stewards, and prudent servants to the Creator, because they truly, in all essence, the lands here on this planet all belong to the one Creator God of the universe, no matter what you choose to call him. Whenever we're all dead, blown away, and turned back to dust and ashes, it will all still be his. So we're mere stewards on the land, and try to be good stewards and do a diligent job of keeping the one sovereign master, the ruler of the universe and all that's good and light, happy by being good stewards to him and trying to be good servants to him, and taking good care of the lands and the creatures on the lands and use them in a prudent fashion and maintain them in a sustainable and viable, eternally usable fashion where they're not modified and transformed in some sort of a genetic monster that we don't know what's going to come out of it, or poisoned and wiped off the face of the planet by chemtrails or aerial sprayings or perhaps fracking or poisoning of the water or radiation blowing over the land or other forms of insidious destruction of his lands, which they have no right to destroy. But when we talk about jurisdiction, there are about three different ways that jurisdiction can be. You can be under the jurisdiction, you can be or over the jurisdiction, or you can be within or without the jurisdiction. And in order for the court to invoke jurisdiction, there must be some establishing rule of law which creates the relationship, the lexis nexus, the legal connection. It may be the lex locus emptori, the local rule of the law of the emperor of the land. It may be the continual presence in the land, perhaps, unless you maybe are a transient sojourner on a temporary sojourn, pending your eventual hopeful return to your eternal domicile with the Creator based upon performance, or lack thereof, in his eternal domicile. Because this is only a temporary existence, as we all know. We come from ashes and we go back to ashes in the dirt in all eventuality, as we understand now, although our spirit may continue on to other existences, be they in the light or in the dark, or good or bad, or evil or righteous. So when we look at this issue of land and jurisdiction in the Bundy's area, these particular different natures of two different territories of the lands on the North American continent that operate were the Utah Territory and the New Mexico later Arizona Territory. Now, there are some very significant questions concerning how Nevada, the state, got to have control or perhaps ownership, or perhaps they just claim jumped or seized control or wrested it in some fashion or used some legal trickery or chicanery to wrangle the lands from Arizona to give them access to the waters in the Colorado River, so they could develop the west and power dams and things of that nature to have infrastructure to have water available to the desert southwest to develop it, make it grow, and sustain life.
We're down to one minute.
Okay. 1 minute? Oh, my
right?
goodness.
Yep. That 9 o'clock
well,
comes fast.
Well, apparently it does. Well, unless we want to hang on until next week, I can tell you unequivocally, without a doubt, the federal government has no case to support their claims of jurisdiction, or in spite of these federal judges' ruling. They're mere theories, and they're subject to examination. It's a rebuttable presumption what they come out with. And until the final appeals are made on this case, it's not a settled matter. And Harry Reid is a bald-faced liar, and there's no truth to his claims that Clive and Bundy is a criminal, a violator, and that he owes these fees because it's ipso post facto, null, void, and nugatory, and of no force of effect of law on the Bundys, and he has no obligation to pay.
Amen.
Exactly. Exactly. Sherry,
now,
we've got to have him back.
Are you writing a brief on this, Chris?
Say that. Say again, please.
Are you writing up a brief on this? Are you writing up an article or anything on this that people can refer to? And
I absolutely am. I'm not quite finished with it, but I'm being very critically explanatory, correct, and trying to
right.
cover all the bases of proving the historical significance and emanation of these lands and the different disparate jurisdictional territorial interests that operate on it that place one without the other. And they are constitutionally diverse and foreign to one another specifically and implicitly. And it's
That'd be awesome.
Unquestionable.
Yeah, Yeah, that'd be great. So we're going to have you on next week to follow up. So people need to really follow this so they understand what's going on, so we will not be duped in the future, because this is not going to be the end of it. There's a lot of other people that are struggling with the same thing the Bundys are doing, but they're just not as high profile. And the word needs to go out so we can help these individuals.
Well, anybody on the call that has an interest in the Bundys, there is a thank you party to all the people who have put forth efforts to help them protect and defend their private rights to land ownership. And there's a barbecue there on Friday night. And I think all the supporters of Bundys are invited. We hope the enemies don't come, but I'm guessing they would probably be able to eat if they showed up too.
Absolutely.
Bundys are fabulous and wonderful people, the salt of the earth, and very spiritual, humble people, but they know they're right, and it takes a very powerful man to know the Creator's behind him, and he stands with the Lord and the law and what's right and willing to fight for it, and knows the Lord is behind him, and that's the way Mr. Bundy specifically is, and his whole family has been brought up that way.
And that's why they're prevailing.
Yes.
Well, that's why we're trying to help.
Yeah, and I thank God you are. So, Sally, are we off the air now?
Yes, we are no longer being recorded. Those that are on the phone are still hearing us, but it's not being broadcast over the Internet at this point.
And do you have anybody out there that might have a question for Chris, or if we can grab a couple more minutes of his time?
We've got some listeners out there, but they haven't pushed one, so if anybody has a question,
Okay,
go ahead, Neil.
Yes, hi, Chris. This is Neil Rice. I work with everybody here. My question is, as far as the Constitution and taking into the matter of when the Constitution was written, that it had stated in there that once a state is formed and accepted in the Union,
mm-hmm.
the federal government no longer has control over that land within the state's borders.
Well, I agree with that contemplation, although there were specifically limited and set forth needful purposes of government that were enumerated explicitly of munitions, post roads, post offices,
right, no,
schools.
That we understand that, yes.
Right, right.
Okay, now the continental United States is now formed on 50 independent sovereign states.
Yep.
And no unclaimed lands are technically in existence. Therefore, under the Constitution, even the property clause no longer applies in this realm, and the federal government has no control over those state lands anymore.
Well, there are many wise and learned people that would agree with your perception. I just served the Board of County Commissioners here, if you will. Many of them are UN Agenda 21 hired hitmen and women. I served them with a document from the Nevada State Legislature under the Nevada Revised Statutes from 2013 that expressly put forth a very similar claim like you did, questioning the validity of federal assertions of jurisdiction within the state to unused lands that are being claimed by the federals that are putting an undue burden and disability on the states to generate revenues, to operate within, to be able to utilize their lands as they wish, to develop resources and an economy and income. And it's putting a particular burden on the western states that have been placed at precise disadvantage, disparage, and unequal access to justice and law from their eastern counterparts.
Because, you know, I go by the Constitution very strongly and have looked into this deeply. And once a state, like I said, is accepted in the Union, and, you know, I do understand as far as the buildings, the post office, and other structures that they do and everything like that. But they have no control, from what I have read, even in the Enclave Clause, the clause that gives federal control over the seat of government. That's Washington, D.C. and land that has been purchased by the federal government within consent of the state legislator to build these under Article 1, Section 8. That's all there is to it, nothing more.
Let me point out something that's critical that everyone on this call clearly understand, because it's a very different idea than what most of us contemplate. The District of Criminals, or Columbia if you prefer to call it, is not in America. It is a privately owned by private foreign corporation enemy interests of foreign gangster elite governments and other interests around the world. It is without the United States. It's much very similar to the Financial District of London, the Vatican, or the Hague in Belgium. It's like a consulate or a foreign diplomacy is what I was trying to say, but there's a different word. It's definitely a consulate or a diplomatic consul. And so it is not within America. That's why it's a municipal corporation. Muni, of course, means world. And cycle might mean disciples of the world or the New World Order.
If you travel there and say you want to put in a protest, you really have absolutely no rights because you are entering a foreign nation.
Correct. And this is why Rod Class is kind of in a bit of a fit down there and fighting against these foreign devils and these foreign courts and foreign law. He has a pretty powerful case going on there on a gun possession charge. Of course, a firearm is not a defensive implement, and he's served in the Code of Federal Regulations, and the pro se executioners like to twist the words and claim that any type of a firearm device is a weapon, for lack of a better word that they use in there, or a gun or firearm or whatever else. And under the Code of Federal Regulations and the Dick Act specifically, there are some very specific definitions regarding automatic weapons and rifles and shotguns under a certain length of barrel, and that constitute what is described as an unlawful firearm under the Code of Federal Regulations, and it excludes all other forms, including black powder and revolvers, automatic pistols, semi-automatic pistols, rifles of any type of fashion and caliber. There may be some things to do with silencers in there and perhaps armor piercing, but full auto. But other than that, that's the only operating law that affects those. And, of course, they always try to twist the law. That's what attorney means. It means a God-man that twists, turns, or changes the law into some other form or obliterates it completely.
Okay, now let me say one other thing, if I may.
Please do.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Under the Constitution, the powers that were given to Congress, they were not given the powers or the authority to create these agencies and consuls and everything else that they're doing.
You're right.
The most of them are unconstitutional, and our Constitution goes way ahead of all this other garbage. And I call it garbage.
I totally agree with you. If you remember the Reformation of Government Acts, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments specifically, and particularly the 14th Amendment, which created new powers for Congress, creating a new form of federal small c citizen subject to the power of Congress. Congress never before had such power, was given any power or such, and they stole the power. They took it by hook and crook and fooled and hoodwinked the American people.
Right. And in other words, just like most of our politicians today and what they're doing and in destroying America and everything else that goes with it, is they are creating all this garbage that we, the taxpayer, they're stealing our money to enforce something that's totally illegal.
Precisely. It's unlawful. But what we have is a corporation sitting there ruling as a military power, officially, or at least a private foreign corporation without any restrictions of the Constitution operating on it. The pretend POTUS is merely the chief executive of corporation. He may be trying to act as the supreme commander, but he's the supreme pretender, in my estimation, because he has unlawfully stolen that office. He didn't get elected. Stealing an office doesn't amount to an election, in my estimation.
Well, we're going to take back this country. I might not see it. I'm sure I'm not going to see the completion of it, but I sure plan on being here long enough and participating that I'm going to at least see some action.
I expect that every one of you on this call are specifically chosen by the Creator to be here at this time in this place in the eternity for special purposes, and you may be called upon for great sacrifices, great efforts, great work, great duty, great obligations, but you will be exceedingly rewarded for that giving of your service to the Creator willingly and not being forced to, and by licking the boots of Satan like the other side would have you do.
Well, thank you. Praise God, yes.
Indeed.
Well, everyone out there is in my prayers. I can say that. I pray for you daily, and I will not stop.
Well, I can tell you that specifically, I have been truly blessed and have truly great demands placed upon me that I try to rise and obligate myself and dutifully perform, but they come from the Creator that's given me this gift of being able to elucidate these fairly complex law and facts and to recite the citations and things that I do with pretty good accuracy and hopefully good articulation. And I try to do so to please the Creator and be a good servant unto Him and to serve Him by serving you and His people by educating, teaching, and trying to assist in law matters as best I can to fight against these black robe demons and their satanic church courts that are foisted on the people to destroy them. They're really a military force, although they try to act and appear like a disparaged, disconnected set of multiple individuals that have no connectivity. They are precisely a military force. They're all officers of the corrupt court. The judge is an officer of the court, like a barred esquire attorney.
The
pro se executioner is a barred esquire attorney. Your pretender defender is a barred esquire attorney, an officer of the court. The secretary, the keeper of the judge's secrets, is a barred esquire officer of the court, or at least an officer of the court, and subject to the oaths and affirmations to the bar, to the court, and not to the mere money-paying clients, as is the ex officio clerk of the court and the marshal or perhaps the bailiff of the court is also, and likely if there's an interpreter in there, they are also. Attorneys are only authorized by law and their professional codes of ethics, of course they have none, to represent infants, wards of the court, incompetent persons, and military persons, and they consider men from the ages of 15 to 45 to be part of the general non-governmental militia.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something. Are you familiar at all with the common law grand jury that is?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Are they doing anything in Nevada? I certainly hope so.
Well, I am the one in Nevada that has an affiliated with John DeRash's New York Liberty Alliance.
Oh,
and
God bless you.
Well, I had several calls from around the nation about this Bundy incident, and they were very pleased to find one member on the list that actually worked. And the truth is a lonely hunter, is what I can. I had had some prior association with the TRAP, the Restore America Plan of Tim Turner and his group of inside circle that I was highly specious and suspect and distrustful of, but I did try to be, I was the assembly elected Nevada Chief Justice of the Common Law Supreme Court here. And I have studied the common law from Locke and Plunkett and Grotius and Zarathustra and many other wise and learned men of the law. And I like the founders of this country, Marshall and Story, and there's just so many wonderful people that have contributed to this idea of the republic and the rule of the people, for the people, and by the people, with the common law grand jury being the fourth branch, not within government, but without government, that's supposed to oversee government and protect us from these malicious agents and actors acting outside scope, sphere, and color of law.
Yeah, I want to see Nevada get completed there. There's 10 states now that are completed.
Yes. Well,
so
we have
we're
a
waiting
very
for
strong,
you guys, okay?
We have an awfully strong representation here of unions because of the easy way to earn a living here with unions, of communist and socialist, Agenda 20 UNers. This place is rife with them. I mean, you can't hardly spit without hitting one.
Well, you want to come to Florida?
Yeah.
Every state has a large amount of corruption, criminality, crony capitalism, and the seizure of the governments by these Satanists that want to rule over everybody in the New World Order. This is unfortunate, but I know you guys have it terrible there, but every state has it terrible. Colorado, when you go down to Alabama or Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, even up in the northern states and Dakotas and stuff, there are just, of course, California is full of nuts and flakes. They call it the People's Soviet Socialist Republic of California, and it ain't without a good reason.
That's right.
I call it the land of fruits and nuts.
I can't argue with you when you're right. A few flakes there, too, but I'll assure you.
Well, we hope you'll be back on next week if we can do that, Sherry.
Yeah.
Because I know people are going to be wanting to hear the rest of this. I know I am.
Yeah, there are some real strong circumstances, and they're a little bit complex, but I think I can clearly delineate them to you and explain them to where you'll be able to grasp what I'm talking about. There's special jurisdictional aspects of the sheriff in each county that operate on this, and the relationship with the federal government, and what they can do, what they can't do, what types of crimes they can actually be involved in, and grants of land-made patent that operate into these concepts that create special jurisdictions. So hopefully there'll be something that might be interesting and educational for you next week if Sherry doesn't have more important things for us to talk about.
Well, we'll do the same way we did tonight. I've got another candidate. He'll be on from 8 to 8:30. Then we'll have Chris on from 8:30 on.
Seems
if you're
to me
willing to do that, Chris, you know, come on 8:30 next Thursday.
Ms. Sherry, you need a longer show.
I know. Well, we can do an hour long later. I had already booked this gentleman that's coming on next Thursday, so I'm going to give him 30
minutes.
That's
all right.
Yeah.
Like I say, if you'll kind of make a note and remind me where we left off on this one, I'll try to pick up where we left off. And
I do have some notes, so I've got my. I was writing as rapidly as I could, so I
you're
did leave
best,
off.
You're the Sherry. Thanks for inviting me on your call and let me preach and teach to your flock down there. And hopefully I'm bringing something that's interesting, educational, and necessary for them to know. Hosea 4-6, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. It has
to
be true knowledge.
That's right. It's vital that they know. It's vital that they know. They have to hear this. And repetition, it's worth everything because you've got to hear it a couple times before it starts clicking in, you know. We've got some people that are very quick studies and other people that are like me. It takes a little longer.
We're all different and we all have different
gifts. So thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you so much, everybody. Appreciate the questions and blessings to all. Be safe
and
watch over by the Creator. Bye-bye.
Same to you, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, everybody. And let's give them hell, girls.
We're doing it.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Good night.